Yes, you may well have known that the Savoy would have treated you well, but the best you could do was the Railway Hotel. Mike Batts there with Railway Hotel. We have had emails from the fabulous Lisa Barnes, who actually said, with respect to her fine foot soul, Carol Goodman, she's there. Call now. We did. And we connected. So there we are. Happy trails from that point of view. Also news from Penny Evans, who, in keeping with the show, would like to wish us all a happy Valentine's Day for tomorrow. And you said, oh, didn't you, Ed? You know,
I did. Happy Valentine's to you as well, Penny.
Exactly. Or, as we like to say, keeping the Latin theme going, happy Lofacolia Day. Because, let's face it, is it indeed St. Lofacolia Day that we should be celebrating? In case you sort of think, oh, it's a Valentine. It's named after Lofacolia, who was the, it's changed into Valentine, really. It's true. Isn't that right, Michelle? Isn't that correct, Michelle Monroe?
Well, it is, Alex.
Quite evidently, yes. Now, when we spoke this morning, I said, oh, I see you've actually selected a classic Matt track here, which kind of has that echo of Valentine's thing there.
Well, they're all classic, really,
well,
aren't
true.
They?
Well, exactly.
The thing is, it's always a nice excuse when Valentine's comes around to do something special. And this week I'm visiting the latest Matt Monroe release, Matt Uncovered, De Rerum Monroe, and also solving a little mystery at the same time. Produced by George Martin, tonight's choice was recorded on the 21st of July, 1972, at Air Studios, London, during the sessions for Dad's album, For the Present. As with all releases, my cohort in crime, Richard Moore, and I do an enormous amount of research while writing the album's notes, and it was here that we came upon a puzzlement. Who actually wrote the song? The MCPS and Performing Rights Society in the UK and ASCAP in the States all came up blank, and even a Google search only came up with songs of the same title written in the last few years. In the end, we had no choice but to admit defeat and label it unknown. So fast forward a few months to just after Christmas, and Richard received a call from a certain Mr. Buddy Greco. He'd just got Dad's new album and found himself amazed when this particular song cropped up. As it turned out, it was a song he had written with Engelbert Humperdinck and recorded himself a year or so before my dad. He was delighted to hear it sung by my dad and will be credited on future pressings of the disc. One mystery still remains, though. We still have no idea who arranged the song. So here, then, is the Greco-Humperdinck composition, How Can I Live Without Your Love.
Probably the best words that were spoken in betwixt times in the studio were uttered by Grace Parker when you said, is this really her dad then?
Well, it sounded like Frank Sinatra. I was really confused.
It is Michelle Monroe's dad.
Wow.
Yeah. It was your dad, wasn't it, Michelle?
I think it was. That's what I was told at the time.
Well, fantastic. Ed, what do we make of that?
Yeah, lovely. I'd like to listen to the last note of it again. I know that's probably not possible.
I'll get to work on that. You know, if that's what you've actually asked for, you know, I'm sure we can actually find something which will sort of manifest that. Because you know, let's face it, how can you live without your love? Well, how can I live without your love? Stephanie, what did you make of the whole thing?
I really enjoyed it. Actually, it's one of them where you can just close your eyes and listen. Yeah, very nice.
It's full of belief, isn't it? The way that's sung.
Yeah. Belief. That's right, belief meaning. And Katie?
Yeah, I liked it. It was good.
I mean, was it perhaps this particular point you actually wanted, Ed?
Oh.
Showstopping finish.
Not
so
a bad
note.
Pretty spot on, actually.
Yeah. Although, obviously, Michelle, it's a whole different series if we start analysing the musical things note by note. You know, we'll do that for the musicology range.
I know, but it was very interesting because, as I said to you on previous shows, he had no musical background whatsoever and never had any lessons. Mm. And yet, those notes were effortless. Mm. You know, there was no strain at the end like there are with others. Hmm. It was just there. It was like he had three lungs, which a lot of people said.
Well, there we are, but you only need two, so that's
you
important.
You do. Well, mind you, I wouldn't mind a third one today.
Well, you know, walk through that. Stephanie, any other questions or comments?
Yeah, all credit to your father, then, if you said he had no training, because I went to stage school as a child and I can't sing a single note.
No, so. Stephanie, I'm sure that's not true.
I didn't go to stage school and I still can't sing a note.
Katie, any thoughts or questions for yourself?
Don't think so.
So it looks as though Nicola Clancy has actually been beaten by the snow. The official line, I think we'll read her whole sort of text through here, because we have a few moments before we go to Jean Bruce Scott and Randy Reinholtz in California with the latest news from Native Voices at the Autry. She was currently listening to the show Stuck in Traffic, Boo. Now, I don't know whether you're stuck in traffic, boo. Is that some sort of strange thing? Not sure if I should drive in as the snow is looking scary. I'll keep you posted. Well, nothing else has come through. Maybe she stopped listening. Maybe she decided I can't take it anymore. Grace, what are the last two questions we need to put to Michelle Monroe, please?
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us today?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
I just like to upset Alex. You know, I like to vary the answers.
And will we be speaking to you again?
You will. You'll see me next Wednesday.
Lovely.
You can see us, of course, Michelle. Just go to sirenonline.co.uk and you can see the back of my head and several of the team. In fact, we should probably move up, Breeze. I mean,
it's a talented studio, isn't it?
It's a strange and bizarre, wondrous world. Still, here's the Alan Parsons Project. Now, when you actually have the founding and producing artistic director of Native Voices at the Autry online, you realise that it's a crucial time, particularly as you're just about to unveil to the world the official Randy Reinholtz jingle and ident that was capably produced a wee while ago in January, in fact, for this whole thing. So, Randy Reinholtz, first of all, are you there?
I'm here, Alex.
Are you ready for 20 seconds, which basically promotes the joy and the magic that is Randy Reinholtz to the world?
Give it to me, Alex.
Randy Reinholtz, the best director of community engagement and innovative programs from San Diego State University you could ever wish to connect with, and bringing Native American voices to the world via the midweek drive on Siren 107.3 FM.
But will he like it? I don't know.
Wow, I feel the love, Alex.
Well, there you go, exactly. All sorted through with that. You know, we have Jean's ready as well, just in case you're sort of thinking, hang on, you know, what about Jean Bruce Scott as well? You know, to get that sorted through. But we'll hold that back for the moment. So let's jump straight into what's happening, which indeed I sent an email to Laura and Libby saying we're going to big this up, because before we talk about your soon-to-be arrival back in the United Kingdom, the world premiere of The Birdhouse by Diane Glancy. It's happening. Exactly. Friday, March the 1st. St. David's Day, if you're actually sort of keeping things detailed in this. You know, we celebrate that and Welshness in general. But on Friday, March the 1st to Sunday, March the 17th at the Autry National Centre's Wells Fargo Theatre. I mean, I feel as though we should really get the whole midweek drive team into a jet, fly over to Los Angeles and check this out, really. It's amazing.
You should. It's not to be missed.
Yeah, the play that tells the story of Reverend Logan, played of course by your good self, an evangelical preacher fighting to save his family, his church and his community during an economic crisis. So no change there then. Proud promise of natural gas production from fracking seems to provide a lifeline to the small West Texas town. And the cast also includes and features Tyler Cook as Justin Lawrence, Carla Ray as Majel, and Robert Owens, Greygrass as Rope, and Ellen Dostal as Clovis. So, I sense, Randy, that this is, you know, there's magic afoot here.
It's such a beautiful show. We have all these tough times going on in the States, and these small towns where I grew up are just drying up and going away. They just are leaving. And no one really quite knows what to do. And, of course, every time there's a new innovation in some sort of technology that depends on land not being occupied very much, everyone hopes that that's going to be the thing that's going to save them. And, of course, what we're finding out about fracking is it's all secret what they inject into the ground. And for people who don't know, you drill miles deep into the ground, and then this hydraulic fluid that's all secret is injected in the ground, and it breaks the shale up and releases this natural gas. And what they're finding out is, you know, people who depend on well waters in those areas, they can light their water on fire. So there's so much displacement of the gas.
And not just that, you know, there was in Britain, we were faced with the earthquakes in Blackpool and a variety of other things. So, yeah, they were caused by fracking, but it's all right, we've sorted it out now. I'm sorry, I'm not convinced. You know, that's a different line entirely. Now, of course, in the northwest of the country, in Cumbria, they were trying to actually store lethal nuclear waste because they thought, let's put it underground. They won't notice it in Cumbria. After all, what the hey? Thankfully, that's been voted out. Anyway, don't get me started on the environment, Randy, because it could be here for quite some time. Stephanie, any questions for yourself?
No, just talking about the earthquakes has reminded me that my building is always shaking. Oh. And it worries me a bit, but apparently everyone says stop worrying about
it's
it when a train goes past. Yeah.
Or an overexcited student, I don't know, one of those two.
No worries there then.
Yeah, that's okay. Grace?
I'm not really sure what to ask.
No, that's just soak up the atmosphere. Yeah. That's all. Let's go to Ed.
You've just been on a little vacation, is that right, Randy?
He's on sabbatical, is the technical academic term we use. On a little vacation.
How is it all going?
I got to go to Sundance Film Festival for a week. It was a lot of fun. And we saw a beautiful movie. What was the name of the movie, Gene? It was The Look of Love. Oh. And who was the actor? Stephen, he's a British actor.
Tompkinson?
And it's about Paul Reed. Yeah, who?
Was it Tompkinson? No, it was Stephen Tompkinson.
Coogan.
Steve Coogan, right, yes.
And it's about Paul Raymond, who's apparently a notorious character. And it is a beautiful movie.
Randy, just to give you an example, Paul Raymond was probably the British equivalent to Hugh Hefner, if we're looking
at
that sort of
thought.
Thing. You know, that's the kind of line that's actually there. Nice chap. Well, I spoke to several people who actually worked with him, but he made a lot through a whole range of other bits and pieces. Magazines we wouldn't talk about now because we've moved on. We've moved on from the world, really. That's the important thing. I take it then that Jean is there by your side, which is always wonderful.
Yeah, she's over here working busily at the computer trying to get people to come see the show.
Do you think she's ready for her very own ident then? Because we have that ready as well. I mean, obviously we couldn't do one for yourself.
Let me walk over there and let her hear it.
Yeah, this is very good. Okay, we've sorted through this. So this is the official Gene Bruce Scott Midweek Drive ident. Take your Airwolf, anyway, here it comes.
Californian sunshine, Native American joy, and the finest Airwolf helicopter pilot and Magnum PI naval officer ever. It's Gene Bruce Scott, now live on the Midweek Drive for Siren 107.3 FM.
Yay! California sunshine.
That's it.
I'm sure Don Belisarius, when he said that's what I did the whole thing for, Airwolf. You know, it's the California sunshine, the whole heap of goodies there. There we are. You see, we promised you guys your own idents, and it took us some time, but we knew we'd get there in the end. That's the important thing.
Sounds great. Thank you, Alex.
Well, I mean, when we do the Facebook updates, I'm always impressed with the sort of the photographs and the selection of images that you put together on the show. It's impossible not to like one of Gene Bruce Scott's posts. You know, that's the important thing. I like that. That's all great from that perspective. Ed, of course, you saw Gene in action in an episode of Airwolf, which we still sort of you think about today.
Still stuck under all that water.
Yeah. Basically. But the birdhouse, she must be very proud. I mean, in terms of the way that the thing's actually going. I mean, it's Diane Glancy who actually sort of produced this whole thing. And we get from Andy there's very much a kind of balance between an eco-parable, but also good quality drama as well.
Absolutely. Diane is one of our finest playwrights, not just a Native American playwright, but American playwrights. And her work is always so multi-layered and has so much depth and heartbreak and humor and drama. And it's just been an absolute joy working with her on this script.
Native American Voices, or Native Voices at the Autry, America's leading Native American theatre company, of course, acclaimed by critics as a hotbed for contemporary Native theatre, deeply compelling and a powerful and eloquent voice. And we're going to be blessed with your good selves coming over here to both Lincoln and, of course, Harlaxton College in Grantham in April. The days are scooting by so quickly. It's amazing.
They are, and we've booked our tickets, and we're ready to make final day plans and schedules, so I'll be calling you probably later in the week.
This is good.
To make our arrangements for that, and we're just getting so excited.
Well, I was talking to Ed, and we were saying we're going to have a midweek drive, a little trip from Lincoln to Grantham to see you guys, hopefully on the Monday, which we thought would be quite nice, because the performance on that side of things. Tragically, the Wednesday that you're performing, we're actually doing a show. But, you know, we could try and be in both places at the same time, but we can negotiate. Are you you around for a couple of weeks? Because, I mean, obviously, we will get you up to Lincoln, and I know that you're excited to actually meet these guys, aren't you, Grace?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Stephanie?
Yeah, it's nice to put a face to the name, isn't it? Definitely.
Exactly. We can't wait to meet you guys. I've been looking at all the pictures on Facebook, so I'm very, very excited to see you all in the flesh.
Well, of course, these days, Jean, you can actually go to sirenonline.co.uk, click on the webcam, and actually see the presenters, because we actually have a webcam feed as well. It's amazing.
Oh,
it's,
I'm going to have to do that next. I didn't know that.
It's a whole new one. No. Although it's streamed live, it goes live as well from that point of view. Katie Grimmison's mother is particularly impressed with that. Isn't that right, Katie?
Yes, she is.
I would bet that you're not in your pyjamas.
No, we leave that to Phil Leonis, actually.
I might be tomorrow morning. It's an early show. You never know. Yeah.
Okay.
When it goes to midnight in Los Angeles, usually the pyjamas come out and we do the morning special, etc. So, as you know, for the marathon, I mean, you got us through the night, you guys, basically. You know, that's the crucial thing. All right, the San Diego football team didn't do as well as they might have done, but, you know, you got us through the evening. That's the important thing.
Oh, you got us through the evening. We would have been so disappointed if that's all we had to look forward to was them losing.
It's a crucial and critical scenario. Moving onwards, again, in terms of this whole system, are any plans to actually take this whole production of The Birdhouse on tour? I mean, obviously, it's great, and we're happy to sort of promote the whole thing in California, but, you know, is it likely to sort of go on tour? Are we thinking about that?
Well, I am thinking about that, and we're getting the script in tip-top shape to send out to some people who are waiting for it. And then we'll probably know a bit more the second week or so of the show itself, what's going on. We would love to bring it over to England, back over to either Riverside Studios or Border Crossings or one of those places that brought Salvage in. So yes, we would really like to do that. It's a very important play for what's happening here in the United States and actually around the world with the questions about fracking. It's not pro or anti. It's just looking at the whole system and the big business of it and how it rolls over sort of the common man, and it raises some of the questions that we have about environmental concerns and what's going to happen down the road. You know, we don't know these fraccidents or fraccidents that they're calling them are becoming clustered together and happening more often, and so now there is real concern about groundwater and that kind of stuff. So it's just she was a bit ahead of the curve on this whole thing. She started writing this a couple years ago, and her son lives in Texas, and so she was aware of the water concerns. They carry in all of their drinking water, and now they've gotten to the point where they don't use their water even for bathing or anything like that. So it's kind of grown with the play and with Diane, the other concern in the country for it. So it's very topical.
And I think with all great drama, it kind of raises those issues. And without going overly sentimental, we often say we are not necessarily the owners of the planet, we are the stewards of the planet. We're actually the caretakers. Exactly. And ultimately, whether you talk about future generations, whatever your views with respect to that, it's important that, you know, these things are monitored. I mean, that's just a quick straw poll in the studio. Stephanie, I mean, the sort of planetary ecologies, your views on fracking, do you think, we need to just, what the hey, just rip out as much of the planet as we can, really?
Oh, goodness, no, we've got to look after the planet. I mean, it's going to be around for a lot longer than our generation is, and I'm only 20 now, and,
good
you
heavens.
Know.
Yeah, that's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, look after what we've got, I think.
Grace, I presume you'd echo those?
Yeah, I agree, of course I agree.
Katie is a haggard 21-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it lasts the next 20 years.
The word is that the thing that will that your generation would be concerned about or fighting wars over is water.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a frightening idea. Yeah. And if we poison what little we've got, it really creates more and more, crisis.
And who would have thought?
So amazing here is the billions and billions and billions of dollars actively going into this industry. Yeah. It's not as though it's being debated intellectually.
Right.
The amount of money that's going into it, the pipelines that are being debated. There's an Idle No More campaign in Canada where the Prime Minister had said, Indians are idle. We'll break whatever treaties we need to frack and get the oil out and make our countries wealthy. I mean, it's not a small intellectual debate. It's a huge big business issue.
And what you said there, Andy, is something which, if it wasn't so absolutely outrageous, would be borderline farce. I mean, it's just ridiculous that you sort of you're in a sort of 21st century viewpoint that we take that sort of line. We can only hope sense will prevail. It's a serious moment. We still have to fit in our top crime writer Jenny Finch, discussing her second novel in the Alex Hastings series. We might be going to Ilana Rain talking about her movie Ellipse, and of course we've got Phil Learness. But that means those last two questions to both Randy Reinholtz and the fabulous Jean Bruce Scott need to be asked by Stephanie.
Have you both enjoyed our chat today?
Very much, thank you.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. We'll be able to speak to you again soon then.
Yes, absolutely, anytime.
I think we need to sort out a few other areas with respect to that, and things will manifest themselves in their own way. A reminder, of course, the go-to play, and well worth checking. In fact, we'll mention to Fiddly, and hopefully he's tuned into this as far as the whole event is actually concerned. It takes place March the 1st to Sunday, March the 17th, 2013, the Wells Fargo Theatre at the Autry National Centre. If that doesn't actually sort of receive the accolades, the ultimate accolade of becoming a Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week, I will be most disappointed. So there we are. See, in fact, it'll have to be. It's crucial, critical from that point of view. Randy Reinholtz and Jean Bruce Scott, we salute you, and we'll talk very soon about the London, the Lincoln trip, the whole range of other bits. It'll be splendid. Positive thinking.
Positive thinking. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex. Bye, everybody.
Yes, we could walk our walks together, or we could raise a family. When I come home from work, I'll change my shirt and sit by the fireside for tea. Just you and me.
So last year, probably one of the top novels that we actually featured, as far as the Midweek Drive was actually concerned, was a classic, Death of the Elver Man. A genuine sort of delight in every sense of the word, and indeed we thought, can it be topped? Could it be? Of course it could be topped, because coming along now and released to the world, the fabulous The Drowners by, of course, that ace author, Jenny Finch. How are you, Jenny?
Hello, Alex. I'm fine, thank you. Nice to talk to you all again.
Very good. Special mention for Penny Evans, who's been liking the Alan Parsons Project. She's liked a whole range of things. She's been sending us Facebook updates, which is splendid, etc. And indeed, she's already going to check out the urban fantasy world of our author featured in the early part of the programme, Carol Goodman. But, Jenny, let's go. No messing about. A number, please, between 1 and 300.
Ooh. Ooh. 79.
70. Any reasons for 79? Any sort of rationale on the whole thing?
Yes.
She's been and done this before. Okay. All he wanted was to get out of there with his pride intact. But Dr. Higgins had one last test for him. Constable Brown, he called, just as Dave reached the safety of the door. Dave turned back, reluctant but determined, as the remaining policemen gathered outside the room and watched him with malicious eyes. Higgins was rinsing his hands and arms off in a sink and smiled pleasantly at him as he toweled off. "Could you please take that bag back with you?" He indicated a brown paper sack on the side, sealed with chain of evidence labels. Dave lifted it and was surprised by how light it was. There was a faint rustling from inside, the only indication it wasn't empty. "I took the liberty of stripping the hands," continued the pathologist. "The skin was starting to detach, so I removed it to preserve the fingerprints and any evidence from under the nails. If you could sign for it on the way out and drop it off at the main lab, I'd be most grateful." Dave risked a glance at the body, now covered with a stained sheet, and waiting for the porter to wheel it into the freezer. The hands, he recalled, had been encased in paper bags. He walked out of the autopsy room with the evidence bag clutched in his pale fingers, and just made it to the gents before he succumbed to the acid roiling in his stomach. At the end of her first day in charge of the day centre, Alex collapsed, exhausted, into her office chair. The neon light was as brutal as ever, and the buzzing sound seemed louder with every passing minute. Bert had arrived earlier, shaken his head, and pulled that face workmen seem so fond of, the one that means, "I can do it, but it's a really difficult, long and expensive job," when he saw the single socket. She'd half decided she would get by. But more than a few minutes under the light made her realise that was not going to work. There was a tap on the door, and Sue stuck her head round. All done, she asked. Two little scenes there, two little vignettes, one of which deals with the decapitation. Well, not quite, it's just his head. Don't lose it. Crucial stuff, and that just sums up the I didn't have to do any West Country accents as well, which is great, even though Charlotte Fortune says she does like the Bristolian scenario there. Roger DeBank from the University of Lincoln actually said that he found the magic, because he finally managed to get round to reading the first one, Death of the Elven Man, Jenny, you'll be pleased to know. It only took him 5.5 months. It's okay, Roger, we can cope with that. But he found the characterisations that you drew absolutely splendid, and as Ed would say, when I actually pointed out our special acknowledgement there that got the Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM team mentioned as well in the acknowledgement section. Well, to be fair, Ed Wellman almost wept with tears of joy. Yeah, I think it's fair to say. Did you deny it?
To see the names of the stations that we love imprint.
Exactly.
It's really nice.
It's just, emotional. We got all emotional. But once again, you've moved and you've got the classical theme going. You did reveal Alex's name. Begins with a C, ends in an A, very crucial on that sort of basis. Alex Hastings, female, by the way, in case you're wondering. So yet again, despite Jenny keen to actually grab the book for me and say, I'm a woman, I can do this reading. Yeah, I took the female perspective there. I took the gamble side of things.
And very well.
Did you think it was okay? Did you
I thought it was lovely.
Oh, bless you. You see, Jenny Finch, top person. Anyway, let's move on. Stephanie, questions for Jenny, possibly about what this splendid book is all about?
Well, we could go with that one, and I'll ask afterwards if you could give us a little overview.
Yes, so it's the second in the Alex Hastings series. Share with us, Jenny. I mean, I sense, we're already getting a crime drama here. One little minor point before you actually work through this. Mm-hmm. Lauren, I thought her treatment of Dave, and let's face it, we have David Cassidy and David Essex on the show this very evening, just to keep our Phil Leonis happy with the number of Daves that we feature. I thought it was a bit harsh. I mean, he's just trying to do his business. He's just trying to do his job, and after all, just because he had to leave to actually help the person, I think she got over it in the end, but I thought it was a bit harsh, really.
I think it was, but it's the kind of thing that happens if you work in that sort of a job, that the danger is always the job comes first, and after a while you get sick of being put second. And I think Lauren felt that. She's been put second a lot in her life, and she hoped this would be different.
Yeah, it's true. And, of course, the breakdown that the man from the social services and, indeed, the probation service, classic stuff there, classic. It's worth reading just for that, really. I had a flashback to previous sort of universities that one might have actually encountered, really, even though it's not set in a university. Katie, questions from yourself.
How did you become interested in writing crime novels?
I did the Masters in Creative Writing at Teesside University, and one of the additional modules my wonderful tutor Carol Clulow was offering just after I left was on crime fiction. And I always thought I couldn't write crime fiction because I could never work out the endings when I was reading it. And then I realised I was doing it from the wrong end. I went to do Carol's module, and I was inspired, entered the beginning of the book in the Impress Prize, and that's the book that they picked up. And I've really enjoyed it ever since.
Award-winning author. That's what we really could sort of say. It's very crucial for that sort of mention from that. As ever, there are moments in the text where you do tend to go in for the graphic descriptions, and I think, I was quite surprised to find the return of Derek, and I think even now there's a possibility of zombie Derek coming back in the third one. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
No, that's all right. The double whammy of Ada Mallory and, Derek's ex-wife. Fantastic. Yeah, genius. It's nice to see that, as promised, you gave a better role for Ada, and I could see her settling down into character from that point of view. So good news then.
I'm glad you like it, yes. One of my readers, only one, did contact me and say, is Derek really dead? And I swore them to silence and bribed them with a free book.
There you go. Grace.
As it's a series, have you started writing the next one yet?
Yes, I have. I've planned out the third. I know what the fourth is going to be. The third is an extra book I hadn't planned to write.
Wow, okay.
But I got the timing wrong on this one. I'd originally decided to write one book for each year, each fictional year. But in fact, this book only covers 6 months, and I realised to keep Alex's story working, I needed an extra 6 months. of her working in the day centre, and so I began to think about what I could write about the third book. I thought very hard about it and decided, yes, I can do it. So I'm 3 chapters into it now.
Jenny, just a thought. Alex's mother, create an eco-terrorist for her. an eco-terrorist who effectively goes on the warpath and effectively sort of starts hugging trees. That's going to create all sorts of problems within the Hastings household, which I think we'd enjoy.
I will keep that in mind, Alex.
Just a thought, you know, in that particular perspective. Jennyfinch.me.uk is the website to actually go to. The Drown is available now from all good bookstores online and all the rest of the bits and pieces. We still need to hopefully squeeze in Ilana Rain. We've got to mention, we haven't forgotten that we did promise to play Charlotte Fortune's tune once again. You might have thought we'd forgotten that. Did you think I'd forgotten that, Stephanie? Did you think?
I almost had forgotten myself with all these interesting chats we've had.
We will. That is lined up and ready to go now to take us up to Ilana Rain. And Phil Linus will hopefully be joining us as well in the very near future, but the last two questions need to be thrown northwards to author extraordinaire Jenny Finch by Ed.
Jenny, have you had a reasonably enjoyable telephonic link with us this afternoon?
I had a very enjoyable telephonic link.
Thank you, and can we look forward to connecting with you again soon?
I would sincerely hope so.
Jenny Finch rules, that's the whole thing. R-O-O-L-Z, you know, because obviously we're looking at 1980s kind of spelling from that. So
yeah.
Jenny Finch rules, crucial thing on that sort of basis. Other spellings are available.